Oh, Vandals. Oh, Vandals.
Welcome back, Mighty Vandals, to Tubs at the Club, the Idaho Vandals affiliate on the Big Sky Podcast Network. We are joined today by not producer Martin Heemstra. He unfortunately is not going to be with us today. He is on the background. You can kind of see him there. I am your most of the time host, Dallas Hammer. And as sometimes always, it's Brian Marceau from Coeur d'Alene. Brian, how are you doing?
You know, a little surprised. We brought up a little foreshadowing that this episode might be a rougher one, and we were wrong. Still no volleyball news, which means we get to hang out more spring football news on the comment section. Some questions. Are we going to talk about the poll, like the Twitter poll about, like best stadium, whatever, from campus football tour? It's not on the agenda, but we just did for like 2 seconds ago. So make sure if you're on Twitter, vote for it. Thank you, Kevin Marshall, for bringing that up. But we've kind of got, it's weird because we only have a couple more weeks before the actual spring game. We're closing in on finishing running through all our groups. And we have two groups today. One is, a sexy group, and then one's a pretty damn consequential group. So I'm ready.
Well, Brian, because Martin is not here with us today, we have a special guest appearance by Martin Heemstra.
Motherfucker.
Hello, and thank you, Brian or Dallas. I don't know who the fudge rode me in here, but I am just here to give my quick 2 cents on the practice so far and on the pass catchers. It's been an interesting spring practice. There was a couple, I wouldn't say unexpected, a couple of people that maybe I thought were going to be a little more active in the spring that haven't been so far, and that's honestly, I think, more of a sign of depth. There's that D word again, like I said before, for offensive and defensive line that you're going to see again, that we should hopefully be seeing again with this team as it continues to develop. The first position I'm going to be more talking about is going to be tight ends. There's obviously Alex Moore, who we've all seen a lot, who I know a lot of Vandals are excited about. He has, like, as you're kind of reading, as you're seeing this on the screen right now, appeared in all 13 games last year. Unfortunately, like at the two practices that I've been at, hasn't been suited up. I don't know what the injury is. I'm not going to push to try and figure out what it is. Same thing with Jake Cox. He's the most experienced guy that's come back, and he's obviously going to play the way he is. He is the most experienced tight end that has, as far as game time goes, it has been. And played a lot. He was the starting tight end last year. A lot more of a blocker than he is a running back. The first couple of names, obviously, there is also Chance Bogan as well. He has played a lot more of the first teamers as we have gone on, but fortunately didn't make it. Unfortunately, something came up. I don't know, but didn't make it through the whole practice last one I was at. First one to talk about is Mason Minny, someone that named to keep an eye out. He's number 86. He redshirted last year. He's 6'4", 224, but like he's more of a receiving type tight end, but has at least in the practices so far. I know practices are a lot more different than a spring than the game time, obviously, but it showed me a lot that he could probably step in and fill more of the receiving tight end role that maybe Alex Moore might be more used to. He has shown – he kind of has played those flashes a little bit. Blocking's getting better, but still not always going to be – there. Is not there yet. Another name to kind of keep eyes played a little bit with some more of the injuries that has happened is a little more local kid, James White out of Lewiston, Idaho. He's another guy that might get some playing time if more injuries happen. Hopefully not, but he has a little more size to him and has made some pretty decent plays when he's played with the twos and threes in the scrimmages, two scrimmages that I've been with. Yeah, that's all I really have for tight ends. Now the next pass catchers are wide receivers. I'm just going to quickly talk about Jordan Dwyer. The dude can play, and I think the connection that Lane and Jordan have is something that's going to be special. He is stepping up into that number one wide receiver role, and I think he's going to play that role nicely. Another name that Vandal fans should probably get quite used to hearing a lot of is Mark Hamper. He played a lot. He played in only the four games, so he could still keep his red shirt. So he is a red shirt freshman. Came out of Westland High School, and they probably have that and a couple other players they signed this year. He was a two or three star wide receiver for them. He has made a lot of plays in the first scrimmage I went to that last Saturday, like the first weekend in April, I believe. He won the battle axe. He made a couple of great catches that were I don't want to say Hayden Hatton-like, but something you would expect of Hayden Hatton to make pretty routinely. He was making those plays as well. He's obviously not going to be a Hayden Hatton, but it's another – he's probably – in a two wide receiver sets that I saw a lot of for Vandal football, for the scrimmage this year, it was always Mark Hamper and Jordan Dwyer, along with Mason Minny and Chance Bogan as another two wide receivers, two tight end sets. That was something I saw a lot of, and it was kind of cool. It was kind of cool to see a lot more tight ends getting used. Another name that maybe some Vandal fans probably would have thought we might have seen a little bit out of is Orion Peters. He has played a little. He has played mainly with the twos a little bit. He's made some plays. He is still like the speedster. He's probably still going to get playing time this year, but someone that I would probably still looking forward to seeing play in the fall and probably get more game time. I would expect a lot out of him. And Dallas, Brian, back to you guys.
Jesus Christ.
Thank you, Martin, for the quick guest appearance there again, guys. Martin was courteous enough to record that for us before being gone at a Nickelback concert. Brian, I think we're gonna pick it up with receivers. Martin, let us off with tight ends, went into receivers. Let's get into it. Let's talk those pass catchers. Your immediate reactions, and I'll let you take the wheel.
So some of the observations we've been given about scrimmages so far during spring, Martin hit on a couple points that I don't know. I think are worth going over. So for phase one, we've heard little observations about defense looking great and little anxiety about what Idaho is going to be ultimately on the offensive side of the ball. And Martin just talked about and Patty brought it up in the comment section. Jay Cox has been out with some injury. Alex Moore has been out with some injury. Chance Bogan is in a boot now. Martin also brought up, you'll talk about this more later, Idaho is probably going to run a lot more two tight end sets, 12 personnel this year, which was a staple of what Jay Sneck did in his time at South Dakota State, which we also know Aiden Knappick not playing right now in spring ball. Jack Foster has been doing pretty good, which, hey, it's a good sign for depth. We covered that on the O-line end. But after hitting all those injuries, I don't know what offense that wants to run 12 personnel should be doing well against a good defensive unit if you're down to your fourth string tight end. You know, like Patty said in the comments section, Mason Minnie's been taking reps with the ones because three of the ones are, you know, the three of the top tight ends, the two ones, Alex Moore, Jake Cox, and then like the first two, Chance Bogan. If those guys are all out, plus we have some injuries on the O-line, plus there's a couple offensive linemen, freshmen who very well may compete for playing time depth-wise, the offense shouldn't look as strong right now as an experienced, healthy defensive front. So, like, hey, my first thing is big takeaway. I don't think there's any reason to freak out about any bad news offensively out of spring ball right now. I'm completely fine saying if there's questions in spring ball, those are probably your questions leading into the fall. And you could probably understand your strengths in spring ball. Very likely are going to be strengths in the fall, but there's nothing to panic over. Based off what we've heard spring ball. But if you want to start wide receivers themselves, Dallas, you know, Jordan Dwyer is the name that pops out to me as most intriguing. You know, with freshman year, he had looked like he had a connection with Javonte McCoy pretty quick. Then he missed enough of the season with injury to take a red shirt, which was clearly not the plan. He was a top three receiver from the get-go. Then last season,
let me jump in real quick on there, Brian. 2022 stats, Jordan Dwyer was the sixth leading receiver for Idaho, 12 receptions, 136 yards, two touchdowns in four games, and still finished sixth on the team in receiving yards.
Right. And if, for those who are old enough to remember year one, Idaho was a bit more conservative passing the ball in those four games, and he still contributed pretty damn well. So last year, he just, I don't know, it's not like a failure to launch or anything. What Javonte McCoy could do and who the top two receivers were, Hayden Hatton, all-time Idaho receiver, and Jermaine Jackson, really good, very good Big Sky receiver. He just didn't get the really much opportunity. The time last year he looked most alive was in Jack Lane's start against Idaho State. So Jordan Dwyer is kind of the story I'm paying attention to most heading into the fall, because we've known this guy was good since he got here. It just hasn't really clicked 100%. But if he's going to break out, I mean, hey, this is a year for him to break out. We've seen him active in the short passing game as a guy who can make people miss. We've also seen him as a deep threat. So there's a ton of reps to replace with five of the top six pass catchers for Idaho from last season are gone. They're transfers or they graduated. Most graduated. Jordan Dwyer is that one returner from last year who still is able to contribute. To me, Jordan Dwyer for sure. Like, hey, if I'm penciling in a potential offensive All Big Sky guy at some of the skill positions, put a big gold star next to Dwyer.
Yeah, Jordan Dwyer last year, 20 catches, 328 yards, 4 touchdowns, 3 receptions, 100 yards, 1 touchdown in his game with Jack Lane. That's if you're looking for a guy who's going to replace the statistics of, again, Jackson and Hatton, look in receiver room for that. I think Jordan Dwyer is the very obvious, like, smash you over the head 100 times with the hammer. Like, this is the guy who is going to end up being the stud. Sure, something could happen and he's not the guy, but realistically, from what we've seen the last 2 years, yes, he hasn't had the huge breakout I think we all have been hoping to see. We've seen, again, flashes, but part of that's just last year he was behind 3 all-conference receivers. It just is what it is. That's how it's going to happen. But this is the I think the reason we have waited as long as we have to talk about this group, Brian, is because this is the group that is going to be the biggest question mark. I think in the way that
it's a tabula rasa right now.
It's what?
It's a blank slate.
Yes. And that's exactly what I'm getting into, is the returning production this year compared to the production of last season. Last season's offensive output through the air, 3,300 yards, 3,353 for those being very specific, and 26 touchdowns, 260 total catches. Returning production from receivers and tight ends going into this season, 48 receptions, 578 yards, 9 touchdowns. So very, very, very large chunk of production being gone in what's being, again, graduated and moved on. So we are going to see a completely different looking team here. However, I think Jordan Dwyer is going to be the guy. We saw it last year. I know that, again, it was the 3 catches, and hey, anybody can have 3 huge catches in a game and have one great game, but it just felt different watching Jack Lane against Idaho State. It felt like, wow, there's really something there between him and Jordan Dwyer. Felt like that was going to be a huge thing moving forward. But even again, if that isn't the case, Michael Graves was decent in 2022, didn't have a ton of playing time because, again, was a much more conservative team, had Hatton and Jackson in front of him. 15 catches, 194 yards and a touchdown, didn't play a ton last year. He's going to end up being
He was out last year with injury.
Thank you. So Michael Graves out last year with injury, coming back for his, I believe, final season. Again, the COVID years sometimes get a little fuzzy, but I believe it'll be his final season. Mark Hamper, has been mentioned before by us before, by Martin. We talked about him a little bit in the show last year. He's a guy that, again, is expected to be quite good. He was one of the best players in the state of Oregon when he was a senior in high school. This is the room where there is the most amount of question marks. Orion Peters, he had 13 catches for 138 yards in 2022, and he had no stats in 2023 with Wazoo. So a guy who fell out of favor there. Again, Wazoo's typically known for throwing the ball all over the field. Maybe he ends up being a speedster that gets 67% of the snaps and has a great year. We don't know, Brian. This is where we have to randomly project things. And breaking news, if you've been paying attention to the comment section, we have Patty. Patty is here to join us now. Patty, how's it going?
Hey, can you guys hear me okay?
Yes and no, you're kind of muddled, but you're clear enough.
Okay, I apologize. My AirPods are being really weird on with the audio, but hey, we'll roll with the punches. It's like I'm calling into the radio station on the phone.
Yeah, first time, long time.
That's okay.
So, Patty, you jumped into the comment section. For anybody that is obviously an audio listener, not on YouTube, you just jumped into the comment section 3 minutes ago. If you want an on-the-ground opinion, I can pop on and talk. So, Patty, I want your on-the-ground opinion of our wide receivers.
So, the wide receivers, this is very unprepared and just kind of talking about what I've seen. Like, I'll be straight up here. But the receivers are going to be one of the, like, least deep rooms in, you know, of the team next year. And I think a lot of that depth, instead of being, you know, second and third year guys like maybe we've seen in the past couple of years, they're going to be true freshmen. And so I think we have 3 or 4 guys that are definitely, you know, big sky starting caliber good players. And then after that, we're going to have a lot of young guys in that room that, you know, are very inexperienced. And I mean, I think that can be a good and a bad thing. It's just you know, we don't quite know what to expect from a lot of those younger guys. Mark Hamper has been a guy. Mark Hamper and Jordan Dwyer have showed out. They're guys that have had kind of flashes in the past, but haven't really like had their full, you know, they haven't been a number one or a number two target yet. And now that they're getting those reps, they are showing out for sure. Those two guys look great. The lane to, like Martin mentioned in his little video there, the lane to Jordan Dwyer connection has been awesome. And Mark Hamper just has a knack of finding open space and making tough catches. He's not like a guy that blows your mind when you watch him run routes. That I'm talking about Hamper here. He's not a guy that like blows your mind with athleticism or the way he runs routes, but he just seems to always be open. And so, you know, we have two very, very solid guys there. Peters has been coming in as kind of that 2/3 slot receiver, coming in on certain packages, just depending on how, whatever play they're calling there. He's been used both as kind of a deep threat so far in spring ball, as well as a guy that they'll like dump the ball off to in the flat and try to let him go, you know, work. But it will, I would say it's definitely going to be a step down in talent. And that's obvious when it comes, when you lose what, 2 All-Americans, 3 All-Big Sky type level guys, but it's not going to be a bad room whatsoever. I think the concern here is, hey, if we have some injuries, it could be some very young guys coming into place of very important minutes down or very important downs down the stretch. That would be my one concern with the receiver room, but altogether, I think they're going to be fine.
Yeah. And one facet to keep in mind to me as well is if Idaho is going to run 12 personnel the way that it looks like they want to, at least more than in the past, then we're going to have fewer three receiver sets, which is to say, hey, like you referenced the clear two, the top two receivers, Dwyer and Hamper, and behind them, like you said, Orion Peterson has looked like he's a guy who's at least in discussion for playing time. We can't really talk about him, but I think he got a question mark heading into the fall. Marquand McCraney listed as wide receiver, 4-star recruit who, if there's a freshman who can explode, there's like a brain dead pick is like, hey, watch McCraney as a guy who could work in rotation too. But like to like make it, you know, hey, use the idiot version of this. If we're playing fewer receivers, well, like that also does alleviate a little bit of the depth concern. Just the bigger issue then is, hey, top number one, number two guy, you probably don't want to have go down, especially like, you know, Hamper, who's the bigger body, you know, like a little more possession receiver. What I get from what you're saying, Patty, is, hey, if he gets hurt, like we don't know who steps in as a contributor at that level. Jordan Dwyer, he's had an injury history. That's another reason to be concerned is, hey, dude's missed some time with injury. Doesn't mean it's a curse that's going to be there forever, but it's happened before. It could happen again. Overall, so I get, hey, Dallas, so I don't commandeer this the whole time. Anything else on any other points on receivers you want to bring up?
No, I mean, that again, I think a lot of the points I have to make are about the other group of pass catchers and how I think that's going to adjust this offense just based on historically what we've seen from Jason Eck. But again, this is a deep receiver room. We just haven't seen a lot of those guys. There's also a ton of freshmen that are coming in. Yeah. Not to say that I think one of the 7 freshmen that are going to be showing up in the fall, not that I think any of them are going to explode the same way that a guy like Anthony Woods did, but the one thing I will say is, like, I think it's okay to be hopeful in spring that all these things are going to be fixed in the fall. Again, we thought Roshan Johnson was going to be the guy, and then Anthony Woods came in as a freshman in the fall and blew the doors off. I think that's much more difficult to do as a wide receiver, but I do think that there is the chance for that to happen here. I also want to shout out Kevin Marshall in the comment section. Again, if you guys have been paying attention to Tubbs, Kevin's a guy who's in the know. Tons of outside guys in the portal, all caps, tons on the emphasis there. So again, if we get through spring ball and Eck and Co. decide, oh yeah, need to reinforce the receiver room, there is still a chance to do that between now and the fall.
Yeah. And the other thing I think worth bringing up is for the last last 2 years, the receiver production has overwhelmingly been Hayden Hatton, maybe the best receiver in the history of Idaho football. And then Jermaine Jackson, pretty damn good. But that's been the case back-to-back years. I think what we just might see is a little bit more varied distribution, a little bit more even distribution of who these reps are coming from, because until we see it, like, well, you can't expect you have an all-time guy every year. But many schools lose all-time guys, and then they do fine where the production is different. I mean, hey, Patty, like, you know, hey, Benedict Arnold, Patty, just got to bring this up. Like, hey, in Eastern, Cooper Kupp graduated. Well, it's not like Eastern completely fell off a cliff. Like, hey, new guys came in. Distribution is a little bit different. That's just how it works. So I guess that's more what I'm expecting out of this group heading into the season. With the other, like, asterisk I brought up earlier, there's been some anxiety about what the offense will ultimately be, if it's going to be able to take a step up this year due to, you know, O-line concerns. But hey, if you we're allowed to be excited about other stuff too, like you said, Dallas, if the fact that the connection we all believed we saw from Jack Lane and Jordan Dwyer in that, from that Idaho State game, is real, well, it's showing itself up in practice. So it sounds like that is not just a Idaho State's going to Idaho State thing. It sounds like, hey, those two are just, they gel, they work. And part of teams coming together with new rosters, as is going to happen, and especially in the era we live, chemistry matters. It's hard to quantify that, but it sounds like there's real chemistry between Lane and Dwyer, which we'll be able to see in the fall too.
Patty, obviously you've been to some of the practices, so a lot of our focus has been obviously on the ones and Jack Lane. Has there been any receivers that are connecting with the second and third stringers that you're seeing, hey, maybe, again, this guy gets a shot in the fall, maybe he's able to provide some extra production? Anybody you've got thinking that maybe isn't the obvious of Dwyer, Peters, and Hamper?
There's not like any specific names that have like jumped off the page. Like last spring, I know Tommy Hauser was a guy that a lot of people saw and were like very impressed with him. There hasn't, in the few, I've only been to like three or four practices. I've been to every practice, but there hasn't been a guy in those practices that have really like, that has really separated himself as like, hey, that's a guy there. But I think a part of that is there's been a lot of rotation, like bringing everyone in everywhere. And so no one, like, there's a clear number one and a clear number two group, but they're rotating guys a lot. And I think they're trying to get people looks in different places. And so, like, kind of like Brian was referring to, everything's a lot more spread out. There's not like, I don't think everyone gets enough balls to like make a bunch of highlight plays, or one guy make a bunch of highlight plays. It's usually, you know, everyone gets their two or three maybe catches during the team period. And so, you know, it's tougher to kind of have any specific guys that stick out that way. I think the one guy to watch out for that we haven't really heard a ton of would be Trace Higgins. He hasn't gotten a ton of look so far in his Vandal career, but he's an Idaho guy, very fast, and he's made some big plays in practice in previous years. He seemed like he was a little dinged up, maybe like a little hamstring thing. But, you know, we've seen him make some nice catches and some nice plays in practice. Nothing like in incredible, like, wow, you got to see this. But he seems like a guy that would kind of be a dude that may get rotated in at times in 23 or 24. And he's one of the only guys that's taken reps primarily with the twos, and we haven't really seen him yet before. But that would be the main and only guy I can think of off the top of my head.
So again, that's Trace Higgins out of Nampa, Idaho. Christy Mayer in the comment section, another Idaho kid, Braden Rice from Lewiston High School. She's shouting him out for catching a few nice long passes on Saturday. So again, I do think that this is what we're probably just going to have to deal with until the season hits, right? I can't imagine over the remaining days of spring football, there's not going to be a receiver that just explodes and becomes the guy. Like that's just not typically how that happens in spring football. So, guys, we're about getting to the halfway point here. We've talked all receivers. Any final thoughts on our receivers before we move to the other group of pass catchers?
No. I'm ready to take that expedition and talk about tight ends in a minute.
We're going to talk about tight ends in a minute, but first we're going to talk about pristine bitches, because that is Brian's absolute favorite. Guys, if you are looking for a great all-inclusive week-long vacation, do not look past your backyard. Hughes River Expeditions has been Vandal owned and operated since 1976, and they're ready to take you on the vacation of a lifetime. Enjoy a multi-day trip down the Middle Fork of the Salmon, the main Salmon River of No Return, the Salmon River Canyons, or even the Selway. You can check out special trips like one to see the Perseid meteor shower, camp on those pristine beaches, run amazing whitewater, hike scenic trails, spot wildlife. Again, guys, there's beautiful natural hot springs. And as always, the most remote stretches of river in the entire country just for you to go fishing in. Just bring your clothes, let HRE handle the rest. Grab a paddle, catch dinner, and ride the bull all throughout the Gem State. Call him now, 406-540-4450, or check him out at HughesRiver.com. Again, 406-540-4450 or HughesRiver.com. Gentlemen, obviously, the wide receiving core has been the bulk of Idaho's pass production for the last couple of years. You have, as Brian said it, maybe the greatest receiver in Vandal history. You have Hayden Hatton going out there and catching, what, 25 touchdowns in 2 years? Damn near 2,500 yards. Like, obviously, that was the big sexy for the last couple seasons. But now, don't really have that. Jason Mayer in the comment section, didn't we get the Weber State kick returner via the portal? Isn't he a receiver? He's actually a corner. He's not a receiver. So, again, when you can't replace your number two receiver and number one punt returner, you replace him with a corner slash number one kick returner. We'll talk about Abraham Williams in the kick return game in a future episode. But guys, this is, we've talked about this throughout all of spring. This is the year that it feels like the X stamp is really going to hit this program. To me, I think that's going to be most seen in the tight end group. Again, I know that we have not seen a ton of tight end production the last couple of years. I know that Moore is hurt, Cox is hurt, Bogan's hurt, Minnie's playing up with the one. So again, you're down to the fourth guy on the depth chart is playing as the number one tight end. But to me, it's simple roster math. There are 8 guys on the roster in 2022. There are 9 guys on the roster in 2023. There's going to be 11 guys on the roster this year. Before I get into the massive dork alert and discuss why 12 personnel is going to slightly change things and compare it to how X offense looked at South Dakota State, any thoughts on the surface before we get into that, guys? We've lost TJ Ivey Jr. or Teron Ivey Jr., 16 receptions, 287 yards, and 2 touchdowns last year. Jack Schuster is also gone. Schuster, I believe, had 3 catches for 35 yards and a touchdown in his career. Otherwise, the other 7 members of the tight end room from last year have all returned.
I guess I just want to talk about Alex Moore for a minute. Alex Moore has a story. It doesn't 100% track Jordan Dwyer's, but it's not that different. So Alex Moore in 2022, he, as a true freshman, he earned starting spot and blew his knee out against Washington State. So then he missed all of that year. And as we know, sometimes ACL injuries, it doesn't take a year to get back to normal. It takes a year to get back on the field. It takes 2 years. Or a year and a half to get back to closer to what your 100% truly is. Not just as far as speed, but as far as like getting the fact of the injury out of your head and just playing. Alex Moore had 10 catches last season for 102 yards. But I felt like Moore really started to come on later in the season as a pass catcher. And damn, he's got size to be a good big sky pass catcher. So the story to me of Alex Moore, I think is intriguing the same way of Jordan Dwyer. Of a guy that we were ready to see take off, and it's not his fault the dude blew out his knee. But this year, we've seen Jay Cox get a lot of attention because he's taken some clear steps, he's been healthy, but he's been making some pretty meaningful steps compared to the last couple of years. Alex Moore is another guy who I think, we're going to talk about how Idaho does, to reconfigure, reassess what offense is with, the departures we had from last season. Alex Moore has a gold star next to his name for me as a guy who last season we saw him really start to step up. He's a big target. Looks like he's got speed as well at the tight end position. So he's the dude I have my eye on coming into the fall.
Patty, I want your reaction to that. But first, in the comment section, Treb Talks, we've got Vandal beat reporter Trevin Pixley. Tight end health is vital. My thoughts, 2 or 3 tight ends will be in the top 5 in receptions in 24 if health pans out. So, Patty, I want you to react to what Brian said, and then we'll discuss what Treb has mentioned here.
Yeah, so Moore, I got to see him on the field a little bit earlier in spring before he kind of got hurt. One thing, you know, he's always been more of a pass catcher tight end. But one small change that I saw, at least when I was watching him, is he just looks a little bit bulkier. He looks like he's put on a little bit of weight. He was a little wiry for a Division I tight end. And so he's been playing a lot more on the ball, like wide tight end, on the line of scrimmage, on the end, blocking and all that stuff that he didn't get put there quite as often in previous years, just because, you know, he's a smaller guy. He probably wasn't, you know, quite as physically able to dominate on the edge there as a guy like Cox, who is more of a stronger blocker. And one of the biggest things that I've seen is I think his blocking has taken a step this offseason, which is going to complement his game very well. But obviously, the fact that he got dinged up in spring can be a little concerning. And with what we're saying, the receiver room's probably not the deepest room. Well, the tight ends is kind of similar. And so what Trebe is saying, I think tight end health is very important, because Idaho has three guys that could be all Big Sky caliber tight ends if they really go, if they really have a great year. But then after that, it really drops off just in the physically ready category in terms of tight end. And so we're kind of seeing that. Like Mason Minnie has been holding his own with the ones, but the guys after that, they're all small. They're not quite there physically. And so it could be a problem if some of these guys get hurt. But I think the high-end talent is there at tight end, and the potential is there at tight end. They have guys that kind of specialize in one thing. They have Cox. He's more of the blocking tight end, more of an F role. He does all the funky motion and pulls and all that type of stuff. You have Moore, who's more of a traditional tight end, more of a Y on ball. And then Bogan, who's been kind of mixing in between both of them. Bogan's injury has been a little bit more concerning looking, just because he's been in a boot, but you know, we've kind of barely gotten to see this tight end room in spring ball for the most part, and we haven't gotten to see them do a ton with the one. So it's almost like it's a position group that we think will be a strength in 2024, but like we haven't really gotten to see it necessarily. We just kind of are doing the math in our heads. Eck likes to use tight ends. These guys are talented. They've looked good in the past, and they should be good. But, you know, I think a lot of that depends on the health, like Trebe is saying. And so there's going to be a lot more pressure put on these tight ends to actually produce in the receiving game. And Jack Lane's going to keep an eye out for his tight ends a lot more often than a guy like Bonnie did. So I think tight ends are, like, kind of sneakily one of the most important one of the more important rooms in the offense, in the fact that, like, hey, if these guys get hurt, we're going to be seeing a lot of three and four receiver sets again, and these receivers are going to be, you know, young guys that aren't proven. So Trebe's totally right, man. I think the health is huge, and if they're healthy and go, man, this offense could be really good.
Man, that's the exact thing I've been thinking this whole time. Between Moore, Cox, and Bogan, if you can get two of those three guys to the end of the season in pretty decent shape, I think you're going to be okay. If you've got to cover one of those two tight end positions with Mini or a guy who you're hoping is just going to be physically there in the fall, that's when I'm going to start to be a little bit nervous. But I think the tight end room is going to be so vital, not just in pass catching, but in run blocking as well. So having an extra tight end on the field more frequently than we've seen the last years. Not that two tight end sets weren't used a ton, but the rooms just weren't designed to be a 12 personnel focused offense. And I think that's where we're moving towards now. You look at the production that's happened over the last couple of years. Vonnie's first year, 2022, there were under 300 receiving yards to the tight ends between Connor Whitney, Jack Schuster, Dalton Cash, and Jake Cox. There were 35 receptions for, again, under 300 yards between that. Last year, we saw a little bit more of a step up from that. Between Ivy, Moore, Cox, and Schuster, there were 37 catches. You're over 500 yards, at least between the group. You're seeing more that there were a lot more tight end touchdowns last year than there were the previous year. but part of that does come from, I mean, Jack Lane threw two touchdowns to the tight ends last year. Like some of that is inflated a little bit by, again, Lane having a 50 plus point outing against Idaho State at the end of the season. But what I go back to is just a lot of the Big Sky, and honestly, a lot of football now is five defensive back sets. And when you are loading up the offensive line and forcing teams to play 12 personnel, you're going to force them to play with more linebackers. You're going to give yourself more run gaps to choose from. Not saying that's necessarily going to work all the time, but that's the offense that we're going to see adjusting here. Mike Culleton in the comment section, I'll be interested to see Lane. I think it will be a good thing for you guys. I think that's what we're going to end up seeing is it's a lot more of that. Hey, you've got the running game that's going to be adjusted by the tight ends. But now that you've got two guys lining up with the line, you're going to see Jack Lane utilizing the middle of the field a lot more than we saw from Vonnie. And I think that's where things are going to change here. You go back to SDSU and Jason Eck, and that's what they had. He didn't necessarily have Dallas Goedert in the position group. He was the offensive line coach at the time, but again, one of the best tight ends in the NFL came through that SDSU program, Tucker Kraft, on his way to looking like a very good, productive NFL tight end, as Patty's pointing to his Packers hat. Tucker Kraft came through Jason Eck's offense in South Dakota. So I'm not expecting Chance Bogan to explode into being an NFL draft prospect right off of the bat this year, but it does feel to me like this is where Eck has been wanting to take this program. He was very smart in these are the pieces that Petrino left me with. We're going to build an offense around what we have. It worked really well. This feels like maybe that transition piece into more of, again, the big boy smash mouth football that I would expect to see in an Eck team play. And that, I think that's going to help just in, I understand that it's spring ball. We can't take a whole lot from this. Yes, the tight ends have been hurt. The pass catchers are shallow. But Jason Eck has proved for the last 2 years, ball control and time of possession is the most important thing to him. If you're trotting out two tight ends consistently, you're very obviously looking to run the football between the tackles and, again, right off of the tackles with the tight ends. You're looking to run it in the box, keep the ball, drain the clock, and use the middle of the field, make the 5-6 yard completions to keep your drives going and just naturally have time of possession that way rather than, okay, hey, incomplete pass, yeah, bummer. But it's third and long. I just don't think that's gonna be something we see a lot anymore. It's going to be the ball is going to just keep moving forward in small bits. The clock is just going to drain, and Idaho is going to try to beat teams the same way they've done it for 2 years. They're just going to be a little bit more equipped for it now.
Yeah, and I think that Jack Lane is, and I controversial or not, I think Idaho upgraded at quarterback if this is what you want to do. Offensively, I think this is much more tailored to Jack Lane than it would have been for Javonte McCoy. I 100% agree with what you talked about as far as like, hey, what the play calling last couple of years, part of what dictated it was the available roster. I think and Javonte McCoy is one of those guys too, who had his strengths for sure. But I think Lane is a pocket passer, as a guy who, look, we've been told forever, Jack Lane's reputationally was the smartest dude in the room at quarterback. Reputationally, he was the dude who had the best control, best understanding, best overall grip on the entire offense, but he wasn't playing, which is kind of wild to think, but we get to see that. We saw bits of that against Idaho State, which the thing that in that single game that blew me away after just watching the last 2 years was seeing more guys get the ball, the offense spread around, which is part of why I feel okay about what we have as pass catchers and as tight ends for next year. Of I'm not worried about replacing Hayden Hatton. This is going to be a much more, to me, normal looking distribution, especially if you look at what South Dakota State type of teams Jason Eck coached and did quite well offensively in his time there. That's what got him to Idaho. I think we're set in more ways than one.
Patty, any thoughts on the tight ends?
I'm gonna really quick bounce off of something that you said, Dallas. Speaking on like how defenses have really moved towards the five defensive back or five plus defensive back kind of base schemes. Over half the Big Sky runs a six-man box as their base defense. And so if you introduce, you know, more of a ground and pound type team, I know Montana State has been that kind of a team, but more of a traditional two, three tight ends on the field and, you know, run it down their throat type of team. I don't think very many of these Big Sky defenses are used to it. Like, you know, that's been more of the MBFC style of football. And so I think at kind of bringing that over, that's been the style of football that has won the most championships in the last decade and a half of FCS. So you got to like that and think that that might be something that becomes an edge for Idaho just because defenses aren't used to it.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm it's exactly why I'm not panicking yet that, hey, okay, the offense doesn't look like they figured it out. Well, they obviously hadn't figured it out in Vonnie's first year, and that ended up being okay. But guys, the one thing I haven't hit on as much, I pulled the South Dakota stats for X final year as the offensive coordinator. Do you guys want to take a wild guess what their top two tight ends combined, again, this being a heavily 12 personnel offense, any guesses on what the top two tight ends combined for in X final season as the offensive coordinator in at SDSU? Even just a random ballpark.
I would shoot for something like right around 1,000 to 1,200 yards, because those were the Tucker Craft years, were they not?
Mm-hmm. They were. Yeah, so Patty, you hit it right on the head. Between the two tight ends, they got 89 receptions, 1,005 yards, and 12 touchdowns. Now, again, Tucker Kraft's in the NFL now. Not necessarily saying that Chance Bogan's going to go out there and put Kraft's stat line of 65 receptions, 773 yards, and 6 touchdowns. Not necessarily saying we're going to have a guy jump out to that. But between the tight end room, I don't think it's crazy to have, again, 89 receptions, 1,000 yards, 12 touchdowns. That's Hayden Hatton's production from your tight end room. I don't think it's crazy to expect that. Just like Treep said, if those guys stay healthy, two or three of the top five pass catchers are going to be tight ends. That's just how this offense is going to run now. And I do think it's going to lend itself to wins. Yes, there are probably going to be some shootout games. Hey, I got to be honest, I'm a little bit scared of Eastern. And I'm not just saying that because Patty's on the show. I am a little bit nervous about Idaho's chances in a firefight as they are, again, shifting towards that smash mouth, punch them out style of football. But it doesn't necessarily mean it's not going to be something they can't do. And we saw the offense honestly collapse through most of the second half of the season last year. But again, there's obviously negatives to making a change. But man, when you're introducing, again, loaded boxes against, like you said, Patty, over half the Big Sky is six-man box, five-man backfield. Like, this is just not – this is not something a lot of teams are prepared for.
Yeah, minor pushback I have there about, you know, like, playing against higher-scoring teams is X team – look, X teams at South Dakota State were still among the best-scoring teams in the nation. So, like, you absolutely can put points on – like, this wouldn't be the baseline philosophy if it wasn't effective at putting points on the board. So, like, I know what you're saying of, hey, well, like, the Idaho does hold on to the ball, and that does limit the number of possessions. But we've seen it be pretty damn efficient at Idaho as well. But, hey, at South Dakota State, like, I had the same thoughts prior to when Jason Eck came of being concerned, like, hey, maybe the team's not going to put up as many points. But that absolutely is just not the case. South Dakota State's been like a top 10 offensive team for quite a while with this type of approach. So I just don't think that inherently has to change because it's Idaho.
Any pushback, Patty?
No, I mean, I don't think we're going to see the scoring output necessarily that those South Dakota State teams had, just because I don't know if the offensive line is quite there. But yeah, I mean, it's not going to be a super, it's not going to be an Iowa offense. It's still going to be, you know, a Kochak offense. We're going to see some big plays, and we're going to see some fun offensive football. It's not just going to be, you know, 2 yards and a ground of dust, a cloud of dust, excuse me.
Yeah, I think the middle ground from what Brian said and what I said, I think if you're looking to meet in the middle there, I would fully agree, Brian. I think that Idaho, again, we saw it with San Diego State. We saw it with South Dakota State. Their offense has been quite good for years now. I don't know that Idaho, as we've been talking about all of the depth issues at receiver and tight end, and again, hoping that the offensive line is taking a step out of the bracket that they were in into a more less of a weakness and more of a strength bracket. And I don't know how long it will take to get them to the strength that South Dakota State was, but I do believe when all facets are at full strength, or what we'd hope full strength is in year 4, 5, 6, hopefully longer than that of the Eck era. Right now, I can just see, you know, at the end of the season, hey, if Dwyer's out, two of the tight ends are out, and there's two linemen down, I can see where Idaho would struggle to score some points. But again, most teams are going to be like that. Unless you're Montana State, you don't really have the depth to just survive that many injuries across the entire offense. But that's receivers and tight ends, guys. Again, these are the most amount of production that has to be replaced, minus, again, quarterback and running back. But we know that Lane is the known commodity there. We have seen Eli Cummings. Receivers, tight ends, we have not seen a lot from these guys. There's a lot of projection here outside of, again, we know what Dwyer can do. We've seen the flashes of it. A lot of the rest of this is, hey, Alex Moore, we heard he looked really good when he was healthy. He started getting healthy at the end of last year, got to play a little bit more. And then it's a bunch of question marks and a bunch of darts being thrown at a board. Any thoughts, gentlemen, on receivers, tight ends, anything we missed over the last hour? Easy enough.
No, I think we got just a couple now, like kind of grab bag, like short topics, which actually one of them is cool to have Patty on here for. That's Big Sky oriented. But I'm going to put that news, the Eastern news that matters for Idaho, off for a second. Just today, hey, it's April 17th recording. This is from the NCAA itself. NCAA Council changes transfer rules, permits immediate eligibility for transfers who are academically eligible/in good standing at previous school and meet progress toward degree requirements at new school. This decision replaces what had been year-end residence requirement for student athletes transferring more than once as undergrads, which I just read. That's from NCAA's Twitter. So like in normal person language, there are no longer transfer penalties for multi-time transfers. This has nothing to do with the grad transfer rule. This is saying that initially students had the freebie transfer prior to a grad transfer. And if your coach left, you could leave with him. And this is not just football, it's all sports. As of now, those limitations don't exist. So a second transfer before graduation, the year-end residence was what most people colloquially understood as, hey, that's where you got to sit out a year. Mm-hmm. That's out the window. So pretty much across all sports now, the commitment is year by year. Athletes can choose to exit at the end of each year and enter. And by the way, coaches can choose to push kids out too by cutting scholarships. So that's the news from today, Dallas. I'll let you take it away. Cause I mean, this isn't a long form topic necessarily. This is a mix of nothing changes, but something changes at the same time.
Yeah. So for anybody that's, you know, a sports diehard, these rules have kind of already existed. There was a lawsuit filed last year that has really just kind of allowed most athletes to just take a free transfer whenever they wanted, because again, a bunch of state attorneys had sued the NCAA about this. Now that it's fully codified again under rules that we've basically operated under the last football season, it's obviously going to make a difference for those listening to us as just, hey, I love Idaho. I love Idaho football because it's tied to the University of Idaho, and that's why I love it. Yeah, that's going to change things a little bit for you, because guys can leave again, it's been so much easier for guys to leave the last 10 years anyways, but now, I mean, there is really no huge penalty for transferring. It's you can leave whenever you like. So that will change for things. But to me personally, as a fan of just the overall sport in general, I think allowing the players to move as freely as coaches, I think, is a good thing.
They're going to leave more freely than coaches. Coaches have buyouts you got to pay.
Yes. I mean, students also have, you know, degrees they have to be technically getting and credit. There are things here still. Yes, you could theoretically go to school for 7 years like Van Wilder and not graduate. But I am all for students being able to move around. The one thing that I find most interesting about this is that the board of the NCAA that has approved this has come out and said that they are going to ask to create a new metric, much like APR, the academic progress rating that all schools have to hit to be able to be eligible for postseason, and all the different, like, hey, you actually have to have some schooling around the sports. They're looking into creating the same type of metric to say, hey, if you're transferring to a school, like, a school has to be able to graduate a certain amount of transfers. So there is some little bit of tweaking there. At the end of the day, like, this is inevitable. You can hate it all you want, and I fully empathize with those that hate it, but this was inevitable. It wasn't gonna go away, and it's not gonna go back to the way it was. This is just the new future we have. Patty, any thoughts while you're here?
I mean, I really think, like, I think the actual, like, what was happening, really, like, that's not going to change an insane too much with this change. I think it more just kind of removes some of the hassle that comes along with, like, going along with the second transfer. So, I don't know, maybe someone that has a year left and they're like, maybe I'll transfer, but I'm thinking about staying because they just don't want to deal with the paperwork. I mean, that kind of sounds dumb, but this is just a student's perspective. Like, I think that just takes a step out of the process a little bit. Other than that, I don't know how much it's going to change things. We've already seen guys playing at 7 different schools in 6 years. Shout out Clifton McDowell, but you never know. I don't think it's really going to change too much in reality.
Well, I mean, it's hard for basketball to change more than it has at the Big Sky level, because we are – I'm not doom and gloom about all of this, but basketball, the doom and gloom prediction was correct for the Big Sky, which is – and, hey, Missouri Valley had this too. All but one of the Missouri Valley basketball conference, all conference players are gone via transfer. So I guess, hey, at the bat, there's, you know, multiple sports are going to experience this differently. Basketball, to me, uniquely, is being hurt easily the most at our level. Which is to say, hey, like, Gonzaga, everyone knows the story of Gonzaga. Mid-major worked themselves up to high major. That's over. There's not going to be another Gonzaga. The transfer rules have taken care of that. Because look at what happened at Montana State after. Look, I know they won the Big Sky Conference tournament. They're a 500 basketball team this year after, like, the entire roster left with Danny Sprinkle. So, like, hey, Patty, you're right about this. Doesn't change much for, you know, for basketball. But that's because, hey, that's blown up. That there's nothing to change other than maybe some players start to read the writing on the wall a little bit of a lot of guys who leave don't find places. So fingers crossed. But the good news, bad news about college athletics is it's always a new crew of guys, which is to say, like, there aren't veterans who are going to learn this lesson. There's people who've been taught because they need to. That's the nature of high level athletics. These guys who are taught to bet on themselves from, like, the time they're 5 years old need to figure out to not bet on themselves. Some of them do. That's a pretty hard lesson. I have no idea how that teaches itself in basketball. Football has been a little bit different. It hasn't been hit nearly as bad. Idaho was hit worst in some ways with transfer, but we've covered for the last few weeks. We're actually not that nervous about it. So I still think there is some team building in football that can transcend transfer rules right now. I think there's some team building in football that can transcend NIL, the allure of NIL money for some guys. It's just a basketball is completely different. My hope is that at some point we get to a little bit of a middle ground, because Dallas, I think you're right. Compared to, like, 10 years ago, the players did need some more options, because, like, 10 years ago, the players couldn't leave. Essentially, it was very hard to leave without a penalty. And now, you know, I know you brought up that there's, you know, graduation requirements. Well, if you don't care about your graduation requirements, it's irrelevant, which for some people that is the case. But there is no commitment for players, and coaches do have contracts. We know of a buyout right now that impacts some guys that are close to the show that we're not particularly stoked about. Just say like, hey, there are some rules for coaches. My hope is this can right itself a little bit, because I think there's a lot of fans who, sorry for filibustering, guys, but I think there's a lot of fans who, or maybe older fans, because I'm the elder statesman on the show right now, who what they'd say is, look, I don't begrudge dudes having options. I'm happy they have options. But like, you know, hey, especially basketball, there's really virtually no emotional connection with guys when they're here for a year and leave, which then it just changes the nature of how you root for guys. Say, like, I'll be open when the basketball season ended, because I've been so used to bad basketball at Idaho and the roster turning over. Like, hey, off the record, except I'm recording, I was starting to hope more guys left. And that's not a good place to be as far as wanting the culture to build. But I also do think more fans are going to start to say, like, hey, I understand these guys as being here a year, which is to say a little less love towards players, a little less generosity and leeway towards the players, and a little more outside expectation of, hey, you're here to produce and that's it, which is not the nature of what college athletics is supposed to be. I teach college athletics, high school athletics. Any coach who gives a shit will always say, this is about building leaders, developing men and women, developing people who will go on and do, hey, maybe they're going to be in sports. Most aren't when they're older. It's about developing people who can lead good, healthy, productive lives and help shepherd in the next generation of people do the same thing. And I got to tell you, like, as the rosters turn over a ton, it makes it harder to view it that way. But on the football side, if we're talking football, I am thankful we have a staff who said, hey, at this point, our leverage is make people want to be here. And look, Eck fucking hits home run everywhere. He's done incredible in that regard. So I guess to put a button on it, if we're talking football, Idaho is weirdly in a good place, but it will always feel tenuous when the season ends or when the new window opens.
And I think that's just that's the new normal. Unfortunately, it is what it is. It's why, I mean, also Nick Saban was, you know, 780 years old, and I think using, you know, satanic powers to be the greatest coach the sport has ever seen. Don't take that the wrong way. I love Nick Saban. I admire the hell out of what that guy did. The way that Alabama won so many different titles in so many different ways, truly outstanding. But even he came out and was like, yeah, look, it's just not the same anymore. And yes, that's easy to say when you're the richest, most powerful dude in college sports and you don't have all of the power anymore. But on the surface, like, things are changing. There are certainly more. I'm not going to say every student is that way, but there are certainly more guys that I think are like, hey, if I can leave Idaho and go get paid somewhere else, I'm going to go do that. Like, and that's their choice. That it's a choice that's open to them now, and that's their choice, and there's nothing I can do about it. So I'm just going to accept it and move on. Brian, we're well over an hour now. You had other news that I wanted to make sure we talked about while Patty was here.
Yeah. So we'll have to probably just throw this to Patty for the most part. Eastern Washington has a new men's basketball coach, and home run hire to me. Dan Munson is coming to Eastern Washington. Dan Munson's a Spokane guy, most recently at Long Beach State. But the place Dan Munson made his name in the Northwest was he was the guy who started the Gonzaga run back in 1999, where he coached for Gonzaga for 2 years, took Gonzaga to the Elite Eight in his second year, turned that into a University of Minnesota Big Ten Conference contract offer, was, you know, 500-ish there, then went from Minnesota to Long Beach State, where he was, I'm not going to do the math, I think he was there for like 17 seasons. He was up and down, but not really down, other than his first year and the COVID year. On his career, the dude's made the postseason, I believe, NIT or NCAA tournament, has made it, I think, 13 times. Which is more than Eastern's made it as a program in history. I'm pretty sure that's more than Eastern and Idaho have made postseason tournaments that matter. I'm not counting CBI. That doesn't count. Which is to say, hey, a dude with a pedigree a dude who knows what he, we all know he can coach. Eastern, I think maybe Eastern hoping this is where they restart their coaching tree, which is, hey, that was started by the current one that just kind of finished out was Jim Hayford. And crazy to think that in this few year reset they may have, they've upgraded as a guy to potentially have a tree from. But Patty, you're the Eastern dude here. Your thoughts when you heard Dan Munson's the new guy?
Yeah, I mean, I was super excited about it. I wasn't totally, I didn't expect to get a guy that is coming from, you know, or like a mid-major, a guy that's been up in the Big Ten and stuff like that. So I was very surprised that Eastern was able to attract a guy like him. But also, when you get it more into the background of things, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, he is a Spokane guy. Obviously, he kind of like made his mark in Spokane. That's where he kind of got things started as a head coach. And so now he's 62 years old. It makes sense for him to kind of come and sail off into retirement and, you know, finish out his last couple years coaching at Eastern. And it's kind of a cool story because his dad started his coaching career at Cheney High School. And so we've heard a couple stories from Dan throughout, you know, press conferences and stuff about how, like, when he was a little kid running around Cheney in the park, and now he was coming back for his hiring press conference, and he found himself at that same park. And so it was just a really cool story. And yeah, I'm excited to see where he goes. I'll be honest, I'm not a big basketball guy, like, in general. So I didn't, like, I'm not insanely aware of Munson and his career as a whole. Just, I don't follow college basketball super closely. But everything I've seen makes me happy as an Eastern fan. And, I mean, it's hard to think that Eastern's not going to have at least some level of success moving forward. Maybe not right away. They're not going to reload as fast as the David Riley era, I would expect. But hey, man, you never know with the transfer portal era and how things go and just how everything has gone. Eastern has already lost, like, pretty much all the contributors to the transfer portal. They technically still have a few freshmen on the roster that played, but it really is pretty much a bare shelf. And so, yeah, I'm excited to see where he takes things and kind of what he does. We haven't heard any word on, like, the new assistants or anything like that. So interested to see, like, how he ends up, you know, building that coaching tree from what it sounds like Eastern kind of wants to do a little bit. This is just a question because I have no idea what's kind of going on with college basketball, and, like, I haven't paid attention to things that happened before I started paying attention at all. Was Munson the coach? Was Few an assistant under Munson?
Yes, he was.
Is that correct? Okay, because I thought I heard that somewhere, but so I don't know. I think it's an interesting and just a cool story, and I'm excited.
I think the takeaway here is anytime you can hire a former Vandal football player that just so happens to be the son of the greatest Vandal basketball coach that has ever and will ever live, I think if you can hire that guy to be your basketball coach, you have made an excellent choice no matter where you are. I think that is the major takeaway to take here.
Yeah. Andy Kaus in the comments section saying Dan Munson is a Moscow High class of 80 grad. Go Bears. To put it simply, there's not a higher floor hire that exists in Pigsky basketball. This guy knows what he's doing. He has a background of he has, I think, about seven-ish 20 win seasons in his career. He has two shitty seasons. That's it. The first year at Long Beach and the COVID year, which for a lot of guys that, hey, if you're in California as a non-marquee school in COVID year, I'm fine writing that off. The team rebounded pretty quick. Just made the NCAA tournament, won 20 games this year. When was the last? Idaho hasn't won 20 games for a long time. So if I were an Eastern fan and I heard that announcement, I'd be like, look, hey, you're sad to lose David Riley, but you know, that's the nature of this. I don't know how to be happier about the caliber of hire if you're an Eastern fan than Dan Munson for, you know, a potential factory reset. Cause that Eastern's had to, they've done well at promoting internally, But it's like we've, you know, seen kind of with football, if the cupboard starts to run dry, you start to get a little bit nervous. Well, hey, cupboard's not dry. Munson knows what he's doing. And now your hope is this is what helps restock your cupboard for future coaches, because he's not going to leave Eastern to go be the head coach of a WCC team. He's probably just closing things out.
With that said, gentlemen, we've covered it all. Can I get a go Vandals from the group here?
Go Vandals. We're going to get one no matter what from Patty. He has no choice here.
Go Vandals. Go Vandals. Go Vandals.
Wow, three times, Patty. Love you, brother. That is super powerful. With that said, guys, man, I can't believe Patty said that three times on our show. Go Vandals, guys. We'll talk to you next week.